Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
CinemaSins has a fan club. It's called the Sin Club, and members get all sorts of things like early episodes, bonus videos, merch discounts, and even monthly bonus podcasts. Membership starts at $3 a month, and you can sign up now at patreon.com/CinemaSins.
Like, it really is that many layers of, oh, I know what you know. Oh, I know that you know what I know. Oh, but I know that you know what I know that you know.
Yeah, exactly. Where does it end?
Welcome to SinCast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the SinCast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Aaron Dicer from CinemaSins.
Howdy ho, Cinerinos.
Yeah, this might be our first just you and me recording
just
for a mini-pod.
Just the two of us.
And there's a reason for that. And, you know, today we're going to be doing a mini-pod of Tenet.
A tenny-pod.
Yeah, a tenny-pod. That's right. That's correct. We're not going to force anybody on the team to go out and watch Tenet in the theaters. And I personally had to think about it for a really long time.
Yeah.
I went to buy tickets and, I was like, okay, it looks like the distancing looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be sure to be wearing my mask there and hopefully everybody else is wearing masks. Now that's a dicey thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's not everybody is going to be doing that. And even I had to kind of like, you know, take it off every once in a while, but, I tried to keep it on throughout, But that was a thing. I was a little bit nervous about going in to watch this movie. So there's that sort of hanging over your head while you're watching Tenet, is that we're in a different age and everything. But I felt like I was away from everybody in the theater. It's like I wish that pre-COVID we could experience movies like this.
Yeah. No, the spacing was really nice. The theater I went to did a really good job at putting things in place that I felt comfortable with, including mm-hmm. the spacing, the masks. You know, the mask thing, like you said, when people are eating, obviously you can't eat through a mask, and people want to eat their popcorn and their M&Ms mm-hmm. and that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. But yeah, I was at least 6 feet away from any other human, both sides, front and back. And so I felt pretty mm-hmm. good about it. I echo the same sentiments as you. As for, you know, somebody who, for whatever reason, has an audience where people, you know, look to them as a movie critic to know about movies, mm-hmm. I do feel a little bit of pressure, but I was encouraged and convinced by many of the listeners in the audience that, you know, be safe. Prioritize mm-hmm. your health above all else. And I feel like I did. And I would encourage anybody else to do the same. Prioritize your health above any movie, and make sure you know your situation, make sure you know the situation of your area, because this is a big country and everywhere is experiencing this differently. So just take those things into consider and always prioritize your health.
I agree. This is also going to be a weird mini pod in the fact that I don't know how to talk about this movie.
I'm so with you, man. I am so with you.
I mean, obviously, we're gonna avoid spoilers right off the bat. But even avoiding spoilers, it's gonna be kind of hard to talk about this movie. But yeah, what were you gonna say?
No, it is a difficult thing to talk about. I am obviously very anti-spoiler, but I feel like with Nolan, you kind of know you're getting a concept of some sort. And I feel like with Nolan, as soon as he released the title Tenet, which itself is a palindrome, you kind of could figure out where he's going with he loves to play with time. And so you can kind of figure out how he's going to go as far as conceptually goes on this. And a lot of the things I would talk about non-spoilery are things you kind of know about Nolan. He doesn't, for whatever reason, prioritize audible dialogue. I don't know why this continues to be a thing with him, where it's like, if you don't have subtitles when you watch a Nolan movie, you're going to be lost at least 20 to 25% of the time.
I read 3 or 4 articles before we got on to the podcast today about the sound issue, which apparently I did not realize this was a major talking point about this movie. I saw it on Monday. That was the main thing that I came out of this movie going, man, if I could have just heard some of the things that they were saying just before they did this and that and the other thing, then I think I would have been able to really get on board. I still don't think I would have understood every single thing,
right,
but I would have been able to kind of like know what they were trying to do. And I read several and like one guy in one article is like, well, Nolan has gotten, his sound team's gotten 8 Academy Award nominations and they've won 5. So it speaks for itself. And I'm like, in what way? I mean, what does the Oscars mean when you can't hear anything? I understand also that, you know, they may have it mixed a certain way and then they go into a theater and it goes completely different. I'm with a longtime movie theater projectionist. I totally understand that aspect of it. And you're not always going to have the perfect mix. And even if you do have the perfect mix, you got customers who come out and they say things about things and you make adjustments and you're trying to find this weird balance and everything. Still, I feel like the same, when I hear all these defenses of Nolan's sound, I feel like I'm back where we were with that Game of Thrones episode that was so dark.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody was like, oh, well, you don't have your TVs calibrated just so, you know, and I'm like, oh, really? Well, everything else looks pretty good, even the dark scenes, but I watched this one Game of Thrones and my TV is bad. I was feeling the same way about this, and then there's been defenses like, well, there's some things that you just have to kind of get the gist of and they're okay with that, and like I don't know. I mean to me, I feel like I should be able to hear everything. I feel like that's an easy thing to fix.
I think there's also the kind of the 1-2 punch of Nolan films, a lot of them at least, where they're also so conceptually confusing that you need 3 or 4 times to watch them to understand what's going on anyway. Mm-hmm. And so if they're conceptually confusing and you also can't hear a quarter of the dialogue, it results in a very a not great experience, especially the first time through. So I felt the same way about Dunkirk conceptually, where it was like, okay, this is probably really brilliant, but I'm going to need to watch it a couple more times before I can really understand what he's doing with the timeline here. I get that they're stretched or squeezed parts of the same timeline, but in order for me to process that, I'm going to have to go through this a couple more times. And this movie is that times 10. Like, so it's just one of those things with Nolan where I guess maybe he wants you to be confused the first time because he wants his movies to be, you know, to have a level of maze to them that you have to actually work your way through. That seems to be the intent. I can't imagine that's not the intent.
Yeah, I think so. He may know that you're going to need multiple viewings to watch this, so who cares if the dialogue, you don't catch it right away and everything. The unfortunate thing about this movie coming out at this time is that if you do want to go back, you have to go back and risk doing the COVID stuff again and again. And it doesn't matter how comfortable you were the first time, the more more and more you try to chance this, the more chances you have of getting it.
Right.
And there was an article I also ran by that said, I want to watch Tenet again, unfortunately. And it was just about that same thing. And yeah. I was feeling that. After I got done with this movie, I was like going back to my car and I was like, I need to see this movie again, but I don't know when. I don't know when I'm going to watch it again because, you know, it may be I've already, after this one foray out in the public like this, I'm already going, I need to cool it for a bit, and then I'll go back out later but anyway.
It's one of those two things, like, critically, how do you handle that, right? Like, mm-hmm. do you hold it against the movie that it's not a great first-time experience? Is that right. something you should actually take, you know, quote-unquote points away or whatever from mm-hmm. a movie? Or does the movie stand on its own as a repeated work of art? You know, if you just look at a piece of, you know, wall art one time and just like, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean much to me. Does that make it any less of a piece of art than if you had come back to it and go, oh, now I see these colors over here. Now I understand more of what he's doing over here. Like, mm-hmm. how do you handle that critically? And I don't know that I have an answer, because really the main things I didn't like about this movie are things that will clear up with multiple viewings, I believe. So
yeah.
it's difficult to know where to land on that initial grade.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing that's been messing with me on this the whole time is how do I grade this? I was actually considering giving this an incomplete.
Yeah, no, I think that's actually the fairest grade. I think that's mm-hmm. the fairest way to go about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to say this. I will say that the things that Nolan is doing here with time and everything is really cool. It's cool to see on screen.
Definitely.
The stuff that you've seen in the trailer is just really kind of the surface of what you think you know about this movie. I can't wait to see it again because of, you know, having that knowledge now of what they're going to be doing and everything. I just want to see it under that light, because a lot of the stuff they're doing seems really cool to me. It just seems like, oh, that is inspired. It's just that I don't know exactly what the objective is in every single instance.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the objective in the final scenes because they actually go through and say, here is what we're doing, and this is what this team's doing, and this is what this team's. But they don't do it like as detailed on all the other missions that happen. And you have to also throw in all the little monkey wrenches and twists that they throw into the story
right.
as well. That sort of also, like, even if you think you know what's going on, there's like another motive or, you know, something else that you weren't thinking of at the time.
Beyond the conceptual confusion, there's also the confusion of who knows what who knew, when who knew what who knows, that they knew that they knew that the other person might have known. Like, there, mm-hmm. like, it really is that many layers of, oh, I know what you know. Oh, I know that you know what I know. Oh, but I know that you know what I know that you know.
Yeah, exactly. Where does it end? I think I'm going to settle on incomplete for my grade, and we're going to go into spoilers. Where are you at?
I think that's fair. I think I will settle on an A-.
Okay.
As far as if you push me to give a grade right now, I'm going to say A-, but I will repeat again that the things that bring it down to an A- for me, because I actually loved this movie. I mm-hmm. even loved the experience as confused as I was. But the things that bring it down to an A- are things I really do actually think will clear up over time. I trust that Christopher Nolan has done the homework to make this actually make sense once you've seen it a few times. But it doesn't make sense to me yet. But anyway, so yeah, I think incomplete is fair, but I'll land on an A-.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to just say you must grade this, I would give it a B. But the problem is that it sounds too low for what I'd be given for mm-hmm. what I think I've seen. And I'd be the same way. I think everything that makes it goes down to a B would be fixed after watching this movie 5 or 6 times,
yeah.
have subtitles, all these things that I enjoy about being able to understand movies. So, let's go on to spoilers, because you really, really, really need to get deep down into spoilers to talk about this movie. So let's do that.
And he's basically Kaiser Soze.
Luke's what? Father is actually Darth
he's
Vader. What? She's the sister and the daughter.
They just
no, 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 no. I'm reading the books.
So where do we start on this?
I don't even know. At first,
when I saw the trailer, I thought they were able to manipulate, almost like Doctor Strange does, objects in real time,
mm-hmm.
where it wasn't necessarily, and I can't remember, does Doctor Strange, when he makes that apple go from eaten to not eaten.
Yeah, he has like a time spell that he can reverse and forward time with or something.
Yeah, but it doesn't reverse actual time.
No, it reverses the apple's time, I think.
Yeah, it reverses the apple's time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I thought this was a big sort of play on when I saw the trailers. It takes about halfway through for them to say there's an actual time capsule that's in this movie. There's a machine set up in one place, and there's another one at an airport. I think there's one at an airport.
Yeah, I mean the science in this isn't the important thing, you know. But they do attempt to at least wave at it, mm-hmm. which is that it has to do with radiation and that there's some sort of whatever chemical compound that can radiate objects or people to be able to reverse the way they interact with time mm-hmm. is basically what it is. So there are chambers that do that for objects and people.
Yeah, and you're able to go into this chamber and you can go into the inverted time or whatever, where everything sort of like goes backwards as you go forwards, or in everybody else's perspective, I guess you're going... that's the sort of the headache that I have going through all this, because there is another perspective where everybody else is going forwards and they think you're going backwards or whatever.
Yeah, it's really like an on-off switch. It really mm-hmm. is just an on-off switch for objects. Either you're going forward in time or you're going backward in time. Mm-hmm. And if other people are switched to the binary that you're on, they're going to appear to be going forward. But if they're not, they're going to appear to be going backward.
Right.
So it just depends on which binary you're on, how the world around you looks or acts.
Yeah. And at first, when there's the fight between John David Washington and who we don't know who it is yet in the airport when they're looking for that painting, I thought that the fight did seem like I was sitting there watching this very intently during the first time we see the fight, because I thought, is it possible that they shot this backwards and then moved it forwards
yeah.
when they did this? Because there's certain movements that do that. Now, I think they did shoot it. Well, I don't know.
I think they shot it both ways.
You think they did?
Yeah, I think they're editing together both types of filming. I think they're filming forward at some points, filming backward. That first fight at the end, for instance, he flies out of that door, mm-hmm. which, I immediately knew later that explosion was going to propel him through that door in the other direction in time or whatever. But that mm-hmm. is obviously shot backwards, right? Like that is clearly shot backwards. And then there are other moments where I think it's clearly shot forward. So I think he's using both to convey... the weirdness of what's going on.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see if that was the actual case on this. You're introduced early on to the whole idea of inverted objects. After John David Washington does that, which is it's a great opening scene in IMAX. If you have a chance to watch it in IMAX, that symphony scene at the beginning. Right after that, he is introduced to Tenet, and the actress who played Fleur Delacour in the Harry Potter movies tells him about inverted objects. It's like, all these objects here have the ability basically to go in reverse, but you have control over them too.
Well, no, I think this is part of the hand waving of the science. The objects don't have the ability to go in reverse. They are in reverse. Those objects are in the other binary. They are heading backward in time. So once you realize it, even if you are forward in time, you can interact with them based on them running backwards. So for instance, to pick it up, you just think that you're dropping it, and the object will react to that in reverse time because it knows that's, you know, where it has to go, kind of thing.
Okay.
So again, it's not something easy to or possibly not even something that makes actual sense, but that is what the movie is telling you that something that is in that other binary will react to you in reverse ways, in reverse time. So,
Yeah. So, and I was having a really tough time with that because once they talked about these objects, and then it got, and then it gets further down deep into the time traveling that's going on and everything. I was just like, I actually couldn't understand the beginning part anymore once that happened, because once, you know, once he's catching bullets with his gun, so and all that, I was like, okay, this is about objects. It's not about actual being able to physically go back in time or in forward in time and everything. So when they actually introduce all of that, that's when it went back, and I was like, I don't know what to think of that original stuff. But I like the way you explained it there.
Yeah, it's such a weird concept, because, you know, there's that moment where they're explaining what happens when a human is in the other binary and traveling in reverse, and that you have to wear an oxygen mask, because even though you're moving backward in time, the elements around you are moving forward in time, and so you actually have to have reverse oxygen your body can't, you know, metabolize it or breathe it in unless you do. Like, that stuff is fascinating to think about, and again, I don't know that any or all of it holds together. I haven't had, you know, the ability to process that, but it's certainly fun to think about. So
Exactly. That's why I can't wait to watch it more times, is just to finally get a grasp on everything. But yeah, I mean, the movie's set up in, I guess it's got three or four big set pieces in it. The symphony part at the beginning, the first airport scene where they're trying to find that painting, and then actually going back to the airport to do that same thing. Well, to be the opposite, to be the antagonist,
the
essentially.
Other side.
Which is funny because they call John David Washington's character the protagonist, or he keeps referring to himself as the protagonist in this movie. But that same thing in reverse, and then the big, huge, like, military style op at the end, which is, God, that's going to be in and of itself dissected over and over,
exploding the same building two different directions in time is one of the coolest things I've ever seen
spectacular.
In movies ever. It's unbelievable. Just the ability to think of that, and then the ability to pull it off visually like that is just, I mean, it's mind blowing. It really is.
Yeah, it was a jaw dropping moment for sure, because you're like, oh my God. I can't wait to actually, again, this is just going to be a theme. I can't wait to watch this again just for that reason. And it leads to so many other little cool things too, where, you know, John David Washington sees the tags of a dead soldier in this thing when they're looking for that algorithm thing, which is another artifact that they throw in this movie that throws me off quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, they're very MacGuffin-y with that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot of explanation as to, you know, why quote unquote the algorithm works, and a lot of that is hidden in the fact that this stuff that they don't even know, because this stuff is coming from the future. So that's the other part of this whole plot, is that the tech that they have is only there because people figured it out in the future and then came back far enough to plan it in, you know, this time. So
I did like the whole thing at the end where you know, Pattinson is talking to, they've won, and Pattinson's like, I gotta go back because, you know, somebody's gotta, you know, you gotta
unlock,
like,
that door,
that bomb. Yeah, unlock the door. And John David Washington knows he's going to die, and he refrains from saying it, but it looks like Pattinson knows. He knows that he's going to die here, and I love the thing where, you know, he goes, well, who recruited you to this and everything? He's like, I thought you'd know by now. You did.
Yeah.
You know, way off in the future.
So here's a question. When they make the inevitable next movie, is it a sequel or a prequel?
Oh, yeah. It could do either way they want to, couldn't they?
It's probably both, considering the conceit on this, but yeah.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Um,
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
So, yeah, what else to say about this? Because I know that...
Well, here's one thing that I'm having a lot of fun processing with this movie is just taking someone's perspective and living the movie through their perspective. For instance, you mentioned Robert Pattinson's character. Mm-hmm. You know, for that last scene for him, he's in the reverse... the reverse binary to start with. And they're working in coordination, the two teams that are, one's going one way and one's going the other way. He swaps halfway through because he sees that there is a booby trap to the cave that they're going to. And he is trying to warn Washington and whoever's... is somebody with him? I think.
Yeah, there is somebody with him.
Anyways, he's trying to warn them. So he's like honking behind them. Now he's going forward in time with them. They go in. Everything happens in there. He's hanging out up top trying to help out there, you know, with the forward team. He meets up with them at the end, still in forward time as they are, and doesn't really know what happened down there. And then they explain it to him. He's like, you know, oh, do you know anybody else that could, you know, jimmy a lock like that? And he's like, no. He's like, so then he realizes, okay, I've got to go reverse again, mm-hmm. go back and help them out underneath, and that's where my life ends. Yeah. Like, so for him, you know, you kind of see how that twists and turns, and it makes sense. Like, is that's what's been fun for me, is to kind of, as you start to deeper to think about the characters and what they're going through, I really think Nolan has thought this through. Like, I think it all conceptually at least makes sense. And so that's been a really fun part for me on thinking back and just kind of going, okay, what about from this person's perspective? And, you know, it makes sense. So
yeah, I think that's one thing that we've been able to rely on with Nolan, is no matter how complex the plot is that he sets up. Inception is one of those. When you watch mm-hmm. it the first time, you're not exactly sure. You know, I think Inception might have been a little bit easier for me to understand than this movie on the first try. But yeah. Even I mean, Inception, you have to watch it many times before you finally get it. But Inception has everything planned through. I mean, just everything. It's almost annoying how much he's got planned, you know, because yeah. it's just one of those things where it's like, well, what about this? And some scientists will be like, well, I did something for the inner ear and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you're just like, okay, you just thought of everything then. Okay, gotcha.
Well, there's that whole thing with being shot with an inverted bullet, right? Mm-hmm. And she gets shot with, and by the way, we haven't talked about Elizabeth Debicki yet, who is just great in this movie.
Yeah.
And I love that this movie, more than others I've seen her in, doesn't try to hide her height. I really felt like she was a tall woman in this movie, which I'm just so glad to see.
There's a great scene, just a regular shot of her walking out of like a kitchen or something mm-hmm. like that, and she towers over the guy mm-hmm. that is walking out with her and everything. And I was like, oh yeah, exactly. They didn't hide it this time. Yeah. You're exactly right.
Yeah. But anyways, the inverted, you know, getting shot with an inverted bullet, they even talk about how the mechanics of that are different than getting shot with a regular bullet. And then they have to invert her to help her heal from that bullet wound, because if she stays non-inverted, that wound isn't going to heal right because of the way the bullet came through her. Yeah. It's just like all that stuff is just like, man, I just love that there's, it reminds me of a great Escher painting or, mm-hmm. you know, a great Bach symphony where he would play with how Bach has symphonies that can be played backwards and forwards, by the way. Like, you know, other artists have done this where they love playing with the form because their brain works that way. And I just really love that. It's just so right up my alley. I just love to think about that stuff. So this this movie definitely scratches that itch.
I had an idea to watch this movie backwards, you know, when I get a chance to. Not that it's really feasible, but it would be nice if Nolan, like, actually, you know, made the movie where you could watch it that way.
Well, I would not be surprised if there is an actual fulcrum point. Now, I haven't done any of this math, and I may be completely wrong. Somebody mm-hmm. will do it eventually. But I wouldn't be surprised if there is a fulcrum point in this movie where the airport scene is identically spaced from that point as to where it happens both times.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Now, I thought we were going to end up back at the symphony. I thought this movie was going to be a palindrome. I thought we, and for some reason, I thought they were talking about the symphony, but
he says go back to the Ukraine and everything, and that's where the symphony is.
So either this is just a different part of what was going on at the same time as the symphony, which is what I tend to believe, because I think Nolan would do that. That's fun, mm-hmm. right? That the movie itself is kind of a palindrome. But the final scene doesn't play any of that stuff. Like, you don't see any of the symphony. So I got confused. I wasn't sure if it actually was the same time or not.
If I recall, though, he does say, and again, this is the dialogue that's hard to hear and everything. He does say we got to go back to the Ukraine during that time. The symphony. I think he said something like that during the time the symphony was going on.
I do too. Yeah.
You know, he knows that he's going back to that particular time. And yeah, it would have. It's interesting that they decide to go back to that time, but they don't show any part of the symphony as sort of a mind-blowing type of thing,
right?
Where, you know, John David Washington ran into himself then too, and he didn't know.
Oh, I thought for sure that bullet, that his first experience with inverted bullets, where the piece of next to the chair kind of remade itself. I thought for sure he had shot that bullet. I thought for sure we were going to find out that was him.
And
you know.
You know what? I can't. You know, we'll there'll be theories later on that will say, yeah, that is what that was somehow, some way.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, like, you know, it doesn't say it in the movie explicitly, but if you think about the way everything works and everything, mm-hmm. you know, somebody will have a theory that will back that up. But yeah, I thought it was going to go back to that as well, because there's a lot going on in that symphony part that is weird. Like, isn't that where he finds that technology in the first place? Like,
yes.
Because there's the bombs, and then I didn't know if there was like an extra thing that they took out with them in that symphony thing, and I was confusing that with the bombs, because everything's a box in this movie.
Yeah.
But when he throws that bomb up there and it blows up and everything, I was like, oh, okay. Well, I had forgotten that they had brought out that technology from the symphony mm-hmm. itself. Then it got stolen, I guess, after that, taken by whoever.
Mm-hmm.
After that.
Yeah, I love what Nolan does. I love the fact that their relationship is a palindrome, you know, that they're, and I'd seen, it's not like I haven't seen some of these concepts before. There's a great Doctor Who arc where the woman that Doctor Who eventually falls in love with and that kind of stuff, they have a palindrome relationship. He meets her for his first time on the day she dies, and then they go in reverse, like, you know. So I love that concept. And, you know, for Robert Pattinson's character to have this deep and meaningful relationship with a person who doesn't, you know, who's just meeting them, it's a really interesting thing to think about. And it actually does make me want, you know, see prequels or whatever they'll be called, mm-hmm. you know, to this thing, because I would like to see how they, you know, worked their way through their relationship. That would be fun for me. And I think you could do interesting, you know, different kind of projects that wouldn't feel the same. But yeah, I really love so much about this movie. And that's why, like I said, I if you make me give a grade, I'm going to say A-, because I know I had a really good time, but mm-hmm. I need to watch it more. And that A- may go to a B+ if I find things that don't make sense to me or it falls apart or whatever. I don't think that's likely. I think it's much more, I think it's much more likely that this will migrate towards an A for me. But we'll see. We'll see.
What do we think of Kenneth Branagh in this movie?
I like him. I like him as an actor, and I like that he chews scenery, and he seems to chew it well. He seems to chew it in a way that you go, yeah, you're going for it, Kenneth, but also feels authentic to the character. His bad guys, like the one in this film, always feel authentic to me. They feel lived in. They feel like they have true motives. They feel, you know, like a real... human psychopath, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't really notice anything like totally off, but I was reading a review the other, like just this morning, somebody was like, he's cutting off slices of ham or something like that. That's how...
Oh, he definitely chews the scenery, but again, I think it works. I really do.
I thought it was right. I thought it was well done. I wasn't sitting here going, man, he's... I felt like he was more affected in Murder on the Orient Express than he was in this movie, because he's doing he's doing almost a comical character in that, but he is so serious and so dangerous and, you know, has that Russian accent. I thought he did a pretty good job there. There is probably a million other things to talk about this movie. Just the problem is, we don't know everything. Aaron knows more than I do, obviously. I enjoyed the set pieces. I just couldn't understand where everything was coming from in all of this. And like I said 100 times, just need to see it again.
I have a couple other things that have gone through my head. Number one, this movie handles... I'm going to call it time travel, which it technically is. They are traveling backward in time, but it's not the kind of time travel you're used to. It's not an entry point, exit point time travel. It's a progressive time travel. And it handles it in kind of a 12 Monkeys kind of way, or at least allows that to be a possibility where it says, in fact, it's a big part of the dialogue in this movie, is the dialogue you can hear in this movie, is about how Robert Pattinson's character believes things are set. They just are the way they are, and people make the choices they make, but there's a determined way things have happened and will continue to happen. I love that concept. It is probably the primary philosophical concept that runs through my brain, is the way that you can balance free will with determinism, because I think both seem valid in their own ways. And I think making peace with the idea of free will and determinism coexisting, again, is like the primary philosophical thing my brain has warred with. And so seeing it in movies like this is always fun for me. And 12 Monkeys does the same thing. Ironically enough, the first Bill and Ted movie is pretty consistent that way.
The first Terminator runs along this too. The time loop where anything that is going to happen is going to happen. It will happen. Anything that has happened will happen. They keep saying that all the way through this movie too. Whatever happened happens. Well, actually, you're talking about Pattinson, and he's the one who says it most of the time. But the loop, and it does it in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban too, where they use that time turner thing. The time loops are hard to get around a lot of times. For me, I don't believe in the rules that they set up these things at all. And again, nobody knows how time travel really actually would work. But I never believed that, like, especially like in I don't know if Prisoner of Azkaban is the best example, but, you know, the idea that Hermione is using this thing to take two classes in 1 hour and everything, it's like, well, if you didn't run into yourself, then you're not going to run into yourself. But I have always thought to myself, what prevents that? If you were to do the time, you do the class once and you do the time turner thing, and then you decide, I'm going to go meet myself, what would prevent it? You know, but then again, if you didn't see yourself in that first time, then how could you have ever seen yourself? You know, it's one of those, you know, those type of things. I know what you mean. Those kind of things are really fun to think about.
And with the Elizabeth Debicki character being there, arriving back after she's killed him, and you see her and her son, you know, coming back to the boat. And I think this is an interesting part of the movie for me that I want to try to contextualize is because I think we're supposed to feel like, oh, good, they don't have to deal with him anymore. But I don't think that's what the movie's saying. I think the movie's saying that was a further progressed version of him that he killed, and that they're still going to have the same experience with him that they did before. So I wasn't paying a lot of attention to her emotions in that scene when she saw herself. Because I think my mind was processing, oh, she's probably happy for herself. But I think she may be sad knowing that that person still has to deal with all the things that she's going to deal with, but eventually will have this moment on the boat. So
yeah.
Things like that, I'm again, excited to go back and look at. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up is something that Nolan has always kind of overlaid his movies with, is he loves making movies that can also be a metaphor for making movies.
Yeah,
And that has always been underneath, you know, as part of the subtext of what he does. And I think it's here as well, too, because the idea of editing a film is exactly like this movie. The idea of, you know, doing stuff in a progression and then going back in time and figuring out how this works here and how that works there. And I mean, you call the main character the protagonist. I mean, it's right there on the surface at times. So it's the idea of crafting a narrative through time travel, that I think is also a, you know, something that Nolan's doing here, which shouldn't be a surprise because, you know, it's kind of been, Inception is very much about movie making as well in a lot of ways. So,
yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I liked this. Aaron definitely liked this.
Yeah, I loved it.
Looking forward to seeing it 15 more times in the future, just not in the immediate future. maybe in another week or two, I'll drag myself back into a theater and watch this with the knowledge that I have now, and sort of be able to follow it a lot better. But
now, here's the really strange thing: if you play this podcast in reverse, it's the exact same conversation.
I know.
I don't know if people will notice that if we don't tell them, but
they probably won't. But you know, there are some people out there who play us backwards.
Just
for fun. So we just ruined the surprise for them.
Well, because, you know, it was. I do what I can to spoil things.
All right, any of you out there, have you seen Tenet? Tell us what you think. Go to Sincast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter, SoundCloud. We're also on Discord, and if you want to get on Discord, you can go to the Reddit page and find our link on the right side of the page there, or you can go to Facebook and private message me there. Where can people find you, Aaron?
I hang out on a weekly podcast where we go behind the scenes of the Sins world called Behind the Sins. That's with myself and Jonathan and Danae from the Sins team. I also do a weekly pop culture podcast called Sift Pop, and there are also articles and reviews that happen at siftpop.com. That's SIFTPOP. And above anything else, if you want to just hang out and chat movies or whatever, hook up with me on Twitter. It's at Aaron Dicer. My DMs are open, so you know, just let me know if you have any questions about Tenet. I'm sure I'd love to discuss them because it's that kind of movie.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, that's going to do it for this mini-pod. It's Chris Atkinson and Aaron Dicer. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.